listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. If you have a question or comment about today's show, Jay would love to hear from you at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also send an email to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com. That's questions, the number 4, taylor@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to Turning Hard Times to Good Times. I'm your host, Jay Taylor, and I'm really happy to have with me once again Richard Mayberry. Richard is the editor of Richard J. Mayberry's U.S. and World Early Warning Report. I'm having a lot of trouble getting that out. Richard J. Mayberry's U.S. and World Early Warning Report. I just simply know it as the Early Warning Report. It is a monthly newsletter that not only helps us use history and to understand what is going on in the world, but also has a lot of very good, profitable, long-term investment ideas. And the Early Warning Report is a letter that I look forward to every month getting. And, you know, you get a lot of newsletters sometimes. This is one that I actually really miss if it doesn't come in my mailbox on time. It's earlywarningreport.com, earlywarningreport.com, to learn more about what Richard is doing. And I think there's probably some free stuff there as well. But hey, look, his letter is one of the best bargains I've ever seen. It's very inexpensive for what you get. So I hope that you'll all check it out, earlywarningreport.com. Thanks for joining me, Richard.
Thank you, Jay. I always enjoy being here. Your show is such a breath of fresh air. There's practically nobody out there doing what you're doing. And I, for one, thank you very much.
There are a few other people, Richard, yourself included, not necessarily on the radio all the time, but there are some other people out there, so I am encouraged from time to time. There are still some people who understand liberty and want to retain it, and liberty and happiness. And first of all, before we go any further, I have to congratulate you and your wife, Samantha, for your 50 years together. Wedding anniversary, you just celebrated last month, right?
Well, no, it's in August.
Oh, it will be. So it's coming up. So I'm premature, and I'm premature in celebrating it yet, huh?
Yes. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
But I think it's a good bet that you'll be with Samantha for 50 years. Now that you've been 49 years and all but 1 month. Okay.
Yes.
Well, in any event, what's the answer? How do people stay together that long? Because it isn't all that common. I mean, people, half the population, marriages seem to end in divorce.
Yeah, I hate to sound old-fashioned, but we got married in 67 when the old values that people were taught, you know, by the churches and all were still very much alive, and people felt that they needed to be protected. Things like fidelity.
Fidelity, yeah.
Yeah, you know, while we pride ourselves on being very tolerant of anybody else's lifestyle, as long as the other people aren't hurting somebody, it's fine with us. But we've always stuck with what somebody might have been taught back in, let's say, 1920, and it's worked.
Yeah.
So, you know, after some number of years, I've come to the conclusion that these old values and, you know, taking a marriage vow seriously, those sorts of things became the rules for many centuries because they work.
Yeah.
And so I'm very pragmatic about it. If you found something that works, stay with it.
So, stay with it.
Yeah.
Well, that's really, I mean, you've talked about this whole issue. A lot of the things that are going wrong geopolitically in our country and so on and so forth are because some of those old-fashioned values have broken down. The whole idea of making a promise and then keeping it, doing what you say you're going to do, is one of the keys, right?
Right, absolutely. I think that, you know, that's probably the single most important one in a marriage. What has been lost is the understanding that marriage is a contract.
Mm-hmm.
And you're agreeing to do certain things when you get married. And now, what wasn't done back in the old days and is done some today, but not nearly enough, is for two people to sit down and work it out as a contract. You know, I will do this and you will do that.
Mm-hmm.
those sorts of commitments have to be made and they have to be kept. But I think one of the bad things about the old way of doing things is people just recite their marriage vows that have, somebody taught them, that have been customary for centuries, and they don't really think about what they're saying or what the words mean. They really ought to make their own vows, and they ought to have their own personal written contract about what they're agreeing to. And I think that all by itself would eliminate a whole lot of marital strains. And it's not something that you would say to yourself, oh, gee, we didn't do that when we got married, so it's too late. No, you can sit down any day with your spouse and work out your marriage contract for the rest of your life.
Well, that's a good idea.
Mm-hmm. And occasionally revisit it. Maybe once a year, sit down, revisit it. Maybe there are some changes that you'd like to make. And since it's a contract, as long as both parties agree to the change, then it's a new contract.
All right. Well, some very practical advice on a personal scale, but I would also suggest, Richard, that maybe if our country and our leaders had understood and stayed with the promises that were made in the Constitution, we might not have nearly all the problems we have now. One of those main things you talk about in your upcoming August newsletter is this dysfunctional government, which actually was, in a way, was programmed into the Constitution by our founding fathers. The idea that it could actually be a good thing, that government is dysfunctional, of course, is something that we've been trained is not correct. We've been all, you know, we hear every day on the news the dismay from the mainstream media about the health care agreement not breaking, the Republicans not being able to put through a health care agreement. But you point out in your upcoming letter that there's really some wisdom to that, that in fact it was almost designed to be dysfunctional if government gets too big and too powerful, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. The American founders were not a bunch of dummies, and they were intelligent enough to know that they were setting up a government, and a government has political power, and they knew what political power was. It's the legalized privilege of using brute force on persons who have not harmed anyone. And we're all entitled to use force in self-defense, but only governments have the legal privilege of initiating the use of brute force on people. It's hidden. It's a mailed fist and a velvet glove.
Yeah.
But it's there. And everybody knows when the government passes a law, what that really means is you will do what you are told, or people with guns will come to your home and haul you away to prison. Mm-hmm. That's the essence of government. And the founders understood that, and they realized that has a tremendous inclination to corrupt people. Anybody who has the ability legally to initiate the use of force on persons who haven't harmed anyone, that is corrupting. There's no getting around it. It's an evil thing. And the founders set up the whole system to minimize the use of force on people who haven't harmed anyone. They were scared to death of that power. And they, in fact, you know, their recent studies have shown that they all were afraid of each other having that power. It's an amazing thing. If you had said to Jefferson, you know, can you be trusted with this power? And he'd say, yeah, but I don't trust anybody else.
Yeah.
and they all had that attitude. They couldn't trust each other as well as whoever else might be in on the government. So, you know, that's the first thing to understand about the early American system, that the founders were trying to prevent tyranny. Now, it lasted until the 20th century. It worked very, very well until the 20th century. And then the schools and the colleges were taken over by socialists, and socialists just love political power. They believe it's really nifty stuff because they have plans for us, and they don't want any of us to escape. And so they want that power to make sure that their plans are put into place. And a good example is Obamacare. It's just forced onto you, you know? I mean, here you are minding your own business, living your own life, and the government comes along and forces this thing onto you. So the corrupting effects of power the understanding of that was kind of washed away in the 20th century as the socialists took over the schools and taught people that political power is really great stuff. And you get to like the mid-20th century, and there's practically no disagreement anymore between Democrats and Republicans.
Mm-hmm.
Their speeches sound different, and their advertising looks different, but their actual behavior is practically identical. They're all working hard to build the biggest, most powerful government in the history of the world, and they managed to do that. And today, one result of that is that there are more than, try to grasp this, there are more than 300,000 federal laws.
Mm.
And the federal politicians and bureaucrats make up another 3,000 to 4,000 laws per year. And every one of those is backed by that threat of force. Do what you are told, or people with guns will come to your home and haul you away to prison. Most people aren't even aware of it. The actual fact is that the average American commits 3 felonies a day without
wow.
even knowing it.
And so you go to jail for felonies.
Yes, right. Yeah, a felony generally means at least a year in jail. And one of my favorite examples of this is that we've all been on the edge of a pond or a stream or a lake and picked up a stone and thrown it in the water, maybe skipped the stone. Well, that's a felony.
Is that right? And
that's right. Yeah, as you know, these power junkies in Washington passed a law saying that if you put anything into a fresh body of water that isn't already there, it's pollution, and that's a felony. So
even if it's on your own property.
Yeah, even on your own property. If your 10-year-old child picks up a stone and skips it into the water, that's a felony. And, you know, that's America now. I mean, it's the freedom that we were born with is gone. And that brings us back to the founders. The system they created, if you read the Constitution and ignore the interpretations of the Supreme Court and other people, just read it the way it was written for the typical American back in 1787, just sit down and read it, and what you'll find is that the thing is designed so that the politicians and bureaucrats can't get along with each other. They cannot get anything done. And there are the basic frame of it is you've got these two houses of Congress and the president, and everybody who's a lawmaker is just some guy who won a popularity contest somewhere.
Yeah.
We call them elections, but they're popularity contests.
Sure.
And so the whole federal government is run by these people who won popularity contests and who don't know anything necessarily about the things that they're making decisions about. And they're inherently split up, divided between a House and a Senate, and the process for making laws is just so cumbersome. It's very clear the founders really didn't want the government to do much of anything at all. And the hatreds, the jealousies that grew up under this system were extreme during the 19th century. There were it was very, very common for the senators and the congressmen, the representatives, to have fist fights on the floors of the legislature. And some of them were really bad. People would be crippled up for years. And there was one case, my favorite case, of them not getting along with each other and not being able to do anything to us because they didn't get along, was in 1857 when at least 30 congressmen went at each other in a full-on brawl on the floor of the House. And, I'd love to have been there to see that. But that's an example of how well the founders designed this thing so that there would be so much infighting that they wouldn't be able to do anything to us. And the result was that America became the most free country the world ever saw. Mm-hmm. And in, let's say, well, throughout the 19th century, the typical American, except for seeing the local sheriff, the local judge, and the mailman, the typical American had almost no contact with government at all. He never saw the government. There was no income tax. There were practically no regulations. He lived his life his own way. And the government was just this thing that he heard about that's a long way away, but it didn't touch his life other than for those three cases. So America became this incredibly free place where people were, among other things, free to experiment and invent new things, and America became the innovator of the world. And by, let's say, by 1920 or so, the economy had been so robust for so mm-hmm. long, and poverty had declined so much under this free system, that, you know, so the system of liberty and free markets, that in 1920, the average American lived vastly better than royalty did in 1776.
Mm-hmm.
And they had better food. Yeah, better food, better transportation, better communication, better pretty much everything than royalty did in 1776. That's how fast the progress was and how widespread it was in America.
But showing that the founding fathers' notion that the least government is the best government had some wisdom, had some truth to it, probably.
Yeah, absolutely. It was the irrefutable proof that their system was the right way to go. To set up a government so somebody else can't set up one, and then cripple it so it can't do anything. It's just a placeholder. It just occupies this space so there's a no power vacuum for somebody else to move into, but it doesn't do anything. And that's the way it worked out. I mean, it's an amazing story. If you follow the economic progress of the United States from, let's say, the Constitution, 1787 to 1920, it's miraculous. I mean, it really is miraculous.
Well, why is the story not being told, except by yourself, Ron Paul, a few people here and there? And why is it then that we've lost this tremendous amount of liberty? Because it seems as though if people understood it, they wouldn't want government doing all these things for them. But obviously, we've been programmed, I guess, through the universities and through our all the institutions of our country, I guess, to get us to be subservient or get us to be dependent on government, I guess, right? Is that, yeah, is that the idea? So that those that are providing the services can be in control our lives, get wealthier, have, yeah, their access to the special privileges of money and power?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. The awful thing that happened was this rise of socialism. It came along in the mid-1800s, and it grew. And you have to admit that, you know, most of the people who believed in it back then were, you know, they were good people. They just didn't understand enough economics to realize mm-hmm. how insane right. socialism is. And so the socialists hit on this brilliant scheme to take over the schools and the colleges, which they did. And by 1920, you've got most of the population being taught socialism without even knowing it, not being told what it was. And that's really the case now. I mean, practically everybody that comes out of high school or college is taught to be a socialist and doesn't have the foggiest idea of what it is that they've actually been taught. And the studies show that the higher your level of schooling, the more socialist you tend to be.
That's exactly right. No question about it. Well,
yeah,
Richard, how can this change? Because as I read your letter that's coming out soon, you know, you seem to be suggesting that all this dysfunction is actually good news, but will people actually understand what you're talking about as a result of all of this dysfunction? Well, I mean, I understand this notion that government can't do only, you know, they can't go more than so far because they become dysfunctional. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that the people's minds have to change. They have to understand what liberty is and why it's desirable, because as they see it now, the masses see only the notion of more goodies is the good thing. And, you know, as one investment banker told me some time ago, this misguided understanding of capitalism said that that what capitalism is all about is getting as much as you can for as little work as possible, which in fact, of course, is not the case at all. True capitalism requires you to work extremely hard to compete with others who will come in to take profits away from you if you don't continue to do better and provide a better, you know, more services and more supplies.
Yeah.
So I guess my question is, how do people begin to understand this? I guess your newsletter, my radio show, you know, we try, but man, it seems like it's really difficult because you got all the major media just keep pounding away with this nonsense.
Yeah, the way I've actually, in my way of thinking about this has actually changed in the last few months. I have always assumed that we have to keep teaching about the system of liberty and free markets, and eventually people will understand enough that they'll go back in the direction that was planned early on. And what I realize now is actually the change is happening without most people understanding why. It's accidental, probably, but nevertheless true that socialism is pretty much dead. The socialist structures still exist, but as a theory to believe in, it's dead as a doornail. You just never hear anybody except Bernie Sanders making a case for socialism anymore. And
right.
After the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics fell apart, it was obvious to the whole world that socialism is a catastrophe. It doesn't work. So the unity that used to exist between liberals and conservatives or Democrats and Republicans back during the middle of the 20th century, that's gone now. And this cooperation that they once had in passing all of these laws, that's breaking up. And it's exactly what the founders wanted to happen. They wanted, it's what I call discord by design.
Mm-hmm.
That's the U.S. Constitution, is discord by design, so that the power junkies can't cooperate with each other in stealing our liberty and our money. So we're coming back to that simply because the socialist paradigm has died, and the two sides don't have any flag to rally around anymore. And they're up there in Congress and other parts of the government arguing and fighting with each other constantly now. And the whole thing is getting paralyzed exactly the way it was back in the 19th century that the founders intended. So we are at a position now where a big opportunity is developing to return to the original system where we were free to have a free economy and to really make poverty go away and progress to be a solid thing. But
though, people are going to have to stop looking to other people for stuff and start doing it themselves, right?
Yeah,
do you think that's
right.
going to be a natural outcome of an inability of government to perform and provide the things people are counting on?
Well, I think, as you know, because you do a lot of shows on this, among other things, and in your newsletter, the government's just it's faltering now. It's in deep trouble. It's got $20 trillion of debt. And as interest rates rise, it's got to pay more and more interest. It's headed for a financial disaster. And it's simply not going to be able to, you know, do the handouts anymore. The same situation is Europe is in. You know, they believed in socialism for a while, and it wrecked the place.
Yeah.
So they're in deep trouble, and the U.S. is going to be the same way, and that's going to be the opportunity. People are going to be stuck without the government that they think is a permanent thing, and that's the chance for people like you and I, who still believe in liberty and free markets, to begin really getting some traction and showing people that you know the government is not your friend; it's your enemy, and it has ruined the country. And we got to go back to the original system.
All right. Well, it seems to me that's absolutely true. We're getting broken, as one of my guests said recently. We're going to have to learn how to do things ourselves, because when the system breaks down, but that's good. I mean, we'll go back to the basics again and then start trading with our neighbors, assuming, of course, the government will allow us to trade, to barter, to use currency. They want to take away that from us, too. They're proposing to do that. Richard, we're just about out of time. One thing I want to ask you about, because it's, you're one of the few people that talk about this, and that is the velocity of money. This has everything to do with inflation or deflation. In your newsletter, you still see velocity very, very tame. Do you? What might change that?
I think that we're coming to a case where the dollar is going to be very much more suspect than it is
right
now.
Well, it's becoming that way now. The dollar is starting to weaken very dramatically.
Right, and at some point, people are going to start fleeing from the dollar, and that will be a rise in velocity. And you'll have people taking money out of their bank accounts and out of their mattresses and everywhere else. And
to buy stuff to protect their purchasing power, right, Richard?
Right, right.
All
right. And, you know, run out to buy stuff before the dollar becomes worth even less.
Even
and that'll
less.
Be the rise in velocity that'll create the boom.
All right. Well, we'll have to leave it go at that to be continued sometime in the near future, hopefully, Richard. Thank you so much for being with us today. Well, folks, next week, Michael Oliver should be back with us. Eric Coffin, who is a great stock picker when it comes to junior exploration companies, will be with us. And Ralph Shearing, the president and CEO of a new gold and silver producer in Mexico, will be with us. Until then, goodbye and God's blessings to you.
Thank you again for listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with Jay Taylor. Please join us again next Tuesday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel.